with cursive writing in red slanting over the opening that promises seafood, shrimp, oysters, fresh waters. By waters, of course, they mean fruit juices and rice water and hibiscus tea. Atomiko knows the girls are dehydrated. He plants his staff and points at the counter and says, "Buy juice." Nayeli is so relieved to see any friendly face, even his jackal's countenance, she meekly goes to the counter and digs out more money and buys them tall glasses of iced fruit juice. She can't believe how delicious it all is. They all gulp like people lost in the desert. He sips a glass of agua de Jamaica, red as blood and tart. He thinks he would rather be drinking Mexican beer, the best beer in the world. Yolo guzzles tamarind juice. Yolo drinks horacha sweet rice water. And Nayeli is chewing chunks of strawberries floating in her glass. Atomiko points down the street with his staff, and they follow. He leads them to a small motor court, a motel, white with blue trim. Three cars are parked in its sloping backtop lot. A Mixtex woman sweeps the sidewalk in front of the rooms. A sputtering neon sign sizzles orange against the morning light. The cardboard sign taped in the window lists a reasonable price for rooms. Atomiko points, scratches his chest, and grunts. "See," Nayeli says. "Two rooms," says the warrior. She complies. She doesn't care. She can end up with no money at all. She just wants to bathe, to sleep. The girls share room 101. They cry out, they weep, they fall on the beds, they fight for the shower and the toilet. They turn on the air conditioning. Atomiko has the key to 102. "I am next door," he says. He belches. He says, "Wash your panties." He slams the door. In a minute, they hear the television in his room turned up very loudly and strange thwacking sounds and thumps, shouts. They listen. Finally, Nayeli smiles. She says, "He is practicing." They slept till 5 o'clock. The girls scattered across the two beds like dolls, insensate and snoring in their exhaustion. Their panties and blouses dried in the bathroom hung over the shower rod. All their socks drooped from the edges of the sink and the top of the toilet tank. Vampi's nose whistled in three distinct tones as she breathed, descending in pitch as each exhalation waned. Nayeli was the first to awaken. She lay there for a while, listening to Vampi snuffle. She still had the tiny purse that Tacho had given her. She picked it up off the floor and dug out her Kankakee postcard. She read her father's message again. "Everything passes. A better day would come." She slipped it back in the purse and pulled out her missionary mat card. She looked at his phone number on the back. She sat up and saw Yolo, propped against her headboard. She was holding her own missionary mat card. They stared at each other. "He used to call you Yo-Yo," Nayeli noted. "Call him," Yolo said. "Yes." "What do you think he is like now?" "He is rich. I think he's a movie actor. He is a famous surfer and rock star. I hope he's not married." "Me too." Nayeli got up to put on her clothes so she could go find a phone. Her shirt and her underwear were damp, but she pulled them on anyway and quietly opened the door. That irritating Atomico stood there talking to Wino. Wino was smoking, and he looked up at her and ducked his head. "Geubo," he muttered. Nayeli stepped outside. "How did you get him to come?" she asked Atomico.
"I have powers," he said.
"Yes," she replied. "We noticed the other night that you could fly."
"Oh," said Wino. "La mera neta? This vato can fly?"
There was a payphone on the wall outside the motel office. Somebody had written, "Octavio slept with my wife," on the metal. Nayeli punched 0 and got another polite Tijuana operator and placed her collect call to Tres Camarones. It rang twice, and Aunt Irma grabbed it off the hook.
"What the hell do you want?" she barked.
"Collect call for Doña Irma Garcia Cervantes from Nayeli."
"Yes, yes, of course. Hurry up, I don't have all day."
The phone clicked and clacked a few times, and Nayeli could barely speak, her throat was so tight.
"Tia?" she said.
Aunt Irma was yelling at the turkey.
"General, leave that chicken alone, you mindless idiot!"
"Tia?"
Nayeli repeated.
"My girl!" Irma cried. "How goes the epic journey?"
Nayeli started to cry.
"Ay, Tia," she said. "It has taken us forever."
"It's only been a week," Irma said.
"A week?"
"6 days, actually. Are you in San Diego yet? Have you seen Chava?"
"Chava?" Nayeli said.
"Chava Chavarin," Aunt Irma snapped. "Don't tell me you forgot to call Chava Chavarin. He was the finest bowler I ever saw."
Nayeli sniffled. How could it have only been a week? Surely they had been on the road for weeks. Nayeli tried to remember anything Aunt Irma might have said in the past about Chavarin.
"Where do I begin?" Nayeli said.
"Tell me everything."
"Everything? Well?"
It all poured out. The whole long story of the bus and the dump and the crossing and the migra. Irma interrupted often.
"Chavarin?"
"No, Chavarin."
"He didn't help you, that bastard, or..."
A tone of dread and disbelief seeped into Laosa's hectoring voice.
"Is he, dead?"
"No, Tia."
A tiny gasp of relief.
"Is it possible? Did he..."
"Did he not remember me?"
"No, Tia, nothing like that. There was no Chavarin. He is not here."
"That is absolutely incorrect," Irma insisted.
"I'm sorry."
"He cannot be gone. He married a damned..."
"A gringa. They live in Colonia Independencia."
"No."
Silence.
"He went across," Irma decided. "Call him when you get across."
"Is this why we're here?" Nayeli asked. "To find Chavarin?"
"Don't be silly, God damn it."
Then,
"You were saying you are involved with a criminal named Atomic?"
Nayeli thought, a change of gears. "And
did you also say Tacho is a terrorist?"
There was far too much to explain, so Nayeli forged ahead. "We are going back across," she said. "I don't know how, but we will try again. People here go back over and over, and so will we. I have Mateo's phone number."
"Mateo who?"
"The missionary."
"Jesus Christ, you're calling the Christian."
"Yes. What else can I do?"
"That simp.
Yes, Tia.
Irma sighed. All right. Fine. Good. Keep the project rolling.
We will go to him for help.
You are there to collect Mexicans, Irma reminded her. Don't fall in love with that missionary.
I won't.
And don't screw him, either. If you give him the milk for free, why would he buy the cow?
Tia!
Don't bring me any damned American surfers, and don't bring me any American babies. Bring me Mexicans.
That's what I wanted to tell you, Nayeli said. I think I want to go get my father.
Uncharacteristic silence from Laosa.
To Kankakee, Nayeli continued. I want my father to come home.
Irma sighed. Well, she said. She knew there were 100 things to tell her black-eyed girl, but to what avail? Nayeli was listening to her own heart. She was going to do what she was going to do.
Very well, Laosa finally said. Good luck. Bring that good-for-nothing father back if you have to. I will kick his ass when he comes home.
Wino said, The gay boy. They thought he was a terrorist? He whistled. They'll send him to Guantanamo. He and Atomiko shook their heads. That's rough.
At least he gets to see Cuba, Atomiko said.
No thanks. They looked like two ancient crows to Nayeli, all ruffled and hunch-shouldered, looking at the ground and smoking. The door opened behind them, and the girls came out, rubbing their eyes and trying to wrestle their hair into shape with their fingers. Atomiko looked at Yolo and growled in the back of his throat.
What are you looking at? She said.
I'm looking at you.
I thought you loved Nayeli.
She will not have me. Yolo shrugged him off and turned away as Nayeli reported on her telephone call. All three girls agreed that Mateo's house was a fine destination, mostly because it was the only place they could imagine finding safe haven in Los Unaites. But they did not want to cross the border again. No way! The two men stood listening, and Atomiko nudged Wino, who cleared his throat to get their attention.
Listen, he said. I feel bad you got caught. My socio here has been making me feel bad. So I'm going to do you a favor. It's my first favor ever, so you'd better appreciate it.
He is Wino, Atomiko announced, showing that he had diversified his usual train of thought.
I'm going to take you to the hole.
The hole? Nayeli said.
The hole, Esa. That's what I said.
Wino nodded.
The hole. I had to call in some favors, you understand. This is big money stuff going to the hole. Homeboy says you'll pay me one day when you get money.
The hole?
Trust me, Wino said, which made all three girls doubt him. You'll see, he insisted. It's guaranteed.
Atomiko held out his staff and tapped Nayeli with it.
Guaranteed, he repeated. Just remember one thing, Wino said. You will forget you ever saw the hole, comprenden? Once you go through it, you were never there.
He sucked down the last of his cig. He studied the cherry at the tip.
Most people, they stumble into the hole. They don't live to see another day.
He flicked his cigarette away, and it bounced across the parking lot, unleashing showers of burning sparks.
Bang, bang, he said.
The cigarette butt smoked in the street. Chapter 19. They were out beyond the Tijuana airport.
fences and walls and the usual border boneyard vistas. They pulled up at a scruffy cluster of gas stations and bodegas and auto shops and warehouses. The building where they parked had a tin man welded together out of mufflers in front. His hat was a steel funnel. The sign above the closed door said, M-O-F-L-E-S. It all stank of burning taco meat and dogs, spilled car oil and exhaust, trash fire smoke.
"What's a mofla?"
Yolo asked. She was always the scholar. She liked words, but she had never really heard Spanglish before.
"A mofla is a mofla, damn," said Wino. "It's like, what do you call the pinchy thing in the back of your car?"
"Silenciador," Atomico said.
"A muffler," Yolo said.
"What the hell have I been telling you?" Wino snapped.
Vampi got out of the car and pointed at the tin man.
"He's so cute," she cried.
Nayeli was tense. The girls apparently didn't take note of the isolated nature of this nasty little clot of ruin. They could be on their way to be raped and killed. They could be kidnapped and forced into sexual slavery. They could be filmed being killed. She had seen stories about that in Alarma. A Tijuana cop in a bulletproof vest stood on the corner, a matte black assault rifle pointing at the ground. His bottomless shades turned their way, and he regarded them coolly, then turned away. She was jittery and angry. Angry at the day and the border and the very buildings where they stood. But it was the presence of Atomico that calmed her. She did not like him, but she did not believe he would allow them to be harmed. She looked at him. He had abandoned his campaign to woo Yolo and had turned his attentions to Vampi. He was actually wiggling his eyebrows at her. Nayeli stifled a laugh. She made a fleeting sign of the cross and muttered, "Ave Maria, Purissima."
"Come on," said Wino.
He banged on the steel shuttle door of the muffler shop, and it clanged and rolled up. Smoke and rock and roll billowed out.
"Let's go," said a kid inside.
Wino hunched over and went in, so the girls followed. Atomico held his staff across his chest and stooped through. The door slammed back down behind them. Black Glocks in belts, small machine guns in hands.
"This is them, huh?" said a man in a running suit.
"That's it," said Wino.
"Who am I talking to?" the man asked.
"Excuse me?" said Nayeli.
"Who am I talking to?" the man repeated. He pointed at Atomico. "You?"
Atomico shook his head.
"Her," he said.
The man turned to Nayeli.
"You? You're the boss?"
He smiled, not warmly.
"This short girl?"
He barked out one laugh.
"All right."
He took her arm and led her to the back of the room. It was much bigger than it looked from the outside.
"You were never here," he said. "You don't know anything about this shop, right?"
"Right."
"The vato with the pole led you across, not us."
"Yes."
"We will not help you again. We do this only once, all right?"
"All right." She was confused and was answering the way she thought he wanted her to answer. Wino gestured with his chin.
"Mota," he said.
"Marijuana?" Vampi cried.
Bales lined the walls. The boys in the mofle shop stared at her.
"Big time," Wino said.
"Coca?" Atomico asked. The man in the running suit said, I knew a curious monkey that got his nose cut off.
Atomiko shrugged.
I was asking for a Coca-Cola, he lied.
Wino sneered.
The man in the running suit said, If Wino wasn't my nephew, you'd be lying out in the street right now. We move product in the hole, not bodies.
He threw back a trap door. He reached into the shadows and flicked on a light switch.
Welcome, he said.
Wino winked and started down the ladder. The girls recognized it at once. They had seen this in the Sino Pedre Infante during one of Garcia Garcia's endless Steve McQueen film festivals. It was the dirt tunnel from The Great Escape. It was strung with electric lights on drooping power lines, and the floor was flat and well trampled.
Atomiko whistled. Sweet, he said. I could make $1 million with a tunnel like this.
The man in the running suit came down behind them and said,
That's all? $1 million?
He laughed.
It runs for over half a mile. Right across the border, right under the noses of the Migra. It comes up in a curtain and drapery stitching company on the other side. The workers in there don't even know. When night comes, my associates will slide two big sewing machines out of the way and open the door.
Nayeli had never heard of such a thing.
Vampi and Yolo had eyes as big as donuts. This was truly a thing of awe.
What if you're caught? Nayeli asked. What if they're found out?
We have a burglar alarm, the man in the running suit laughed. And we blow the tunnel on this end and drive away.
Atomiko whistled again.
But you know, the man said, it's a lot of money. ¿Me entiendes? There's people who know about us over there. God willing, our little donations are enough for them to protect us.
He wore a gold crucifix on a chain.
God willing,
Nayeli said, sounding skeptical. The man smiled.
God loves us all, he said.
The girls looked at each other. Vampi was smiling sweetly, and Yolo was very serious. Nayeli set her jaw, hoping she looked fierce.
Go, the man said. It's straight. You can't get lost.
Are there bats? Vampi asked.
He laughed.
No, no bats. Go.
Rats?
No, no rats. There's nothing there but dirt. Go.
Adios.
Wino said.
Good luck!
They had to duck their heads as they entered the hole, but it was fairly comfortable. Nobody had to crawl. It was well lit and hard to believe. Nayeli imagined the border patrol trucks driving above her head as she walked. They raised dust as they shuffled. She sneezed. Wino's voice came down the tunnel behind them.
Send me a postcard, he called.
He turned out to be a good boy, Yolo said. Nayeli had to concede the point. He treated us well.
The warrior, bringing up the rear, reminded them. But he is not me.
Vampi said, Thank God! And the girls laughed at him. They saw one vast brown spider in the hole, but the rest of the walk was a dullness of dirt walls and wooden support beams.
I could use some of that cocaine, Atomiko noted.
The girls had never known a real drug user, and they regarded him with new eyes. He was so gangster. The mota heads in Camarones kept their marijuana to themselves. They got to the end of the tunnel, and there it was, another ladder. Three small boxes stood in the tunnel, and they sat on them. Atomiko squatted in his baboon fashion.
"Hey, look at that," said Vumpy.
A clamshell was stuck in the tan soil of the tunnel wall.
"That came from Noah's flood," Atomiko said.
"Don't be ridiculous," Yolo scolded. They argued about evolution for a few minutes, then fell into a sullen silence.
"Now what?" Yolo said.
"We wait," Nayeli replied.
After a long time, Vampi said, "I'm bored."
Yolo stretched.
Nayeli said, "I want to go to Kankakee."
"Ah," said Yolo, "your father."
"Where is it?" asked Vampi.
"It's around Chicago someplace," Nayeli said.
"What about us?" Vampi asked.
"We," said Yolo, "will visit Mateo."
Atomiko amazed them by starting to snore. They heard loud scraping above them, and the roof popped open, and a gruff male voice said, "Hurry up!" They came into a storeroom full of carpet rolls and tables covered with bolts of material. The two sewing machines that covered the opening were slid aside on rollers, and the rug pulled up and laid over so the trap door could open. The room was muffled, insulated by all the curtains and rugs. The man pointed to an open door.
"In the garage," he said.
They shuffled into the garage and found a delivery van standing there with its back door open. They were startled to see, through the one small window in the garage's side door, that it was dark outside.
"In," the man said.
They climbed up. They made themselves comfortable among rolls of carpet. He reached up, grabbed a leather strap, and slid the door down with a loud crash. They were thrown into darkness. The girls reached for each other. Atomiko clutched his staff firmly, though it didn't seem likely that he could break the van's cargo doors open with it. They heard the door latch click into place. The driver got in the front. The springs squeaked. He started the engine. They heard an electric door opener lift the garage's big door, and they rolled. Down the slope of the driveway, then settling onto a smooth, flat street. They made several turns, fell over when he stopped at red lights. They could hear traffic sounds from outside. He was listening to Mexican radio in the cab. Suddenly, they could feel acceleration, and they were on a freeway. They drove and drove, and they merged to the right and swooped. None of them could tell how long they'd been driving, but the van rolled down a ramp and made an abrupt stop. He honked his horn, shouted something rude, made a left turn and a right turn, drove for a few minutes, and made another, more abrupt, right. They heard gravel crunching. He stopped, but left the engine running. The door latch rattled, and the door shot up. Cold night air rushed in.
"Out," he said.
They jumped down from the back of the van, and before they could say anything to the driver, he was back in the cab and driving out of the big dirt lot. They stood in the darkness, looking around. They could see, at a distance, a lit Spanish mission on a hillside on their right. Before them, a wall of oleanders and scraggly trees, and on the other side of that, rushing traffic. If they craned to the left, they could see some hills. One of them had a lit cross on the top. Behind them, they sensed a void. It was pitch black and smelly, but that seemed to be the way out of the lot, so they walked in that direction. A street cut across their path. They turned right, toward the hill with the cross and away from the old church on the other hill. San Diego seemed to be offering them lit beacons, each one promising that Jesus was watching over them. They came to a small, low bridge, and as they crossed it, they saw the turgid, dark water of a slough beneath them, and they smelled the heavy odor of old seawater. Suddenly, on their left, they saw an expanse of lawn and water. They were walking along a great bay. It was lit by street lamps on tall poles. When Vampi saw a playground across the street, she ran to it and jumped on the swings and started to push herself back and forth. Yolo and Nayeli felt old and serious, far too old to play on swings. But Atomiko surprised them by joining Vampi. He actually put down his staff so he could swing. Nayeli followed. "Children," she muttered. Yolo walked beside her. "Look," she said. "The United States has grass." When the sprinklers came on with a loud pfft and began their automated spit-spit-spit-glide, spit-spit-spit-glide, they ran. Giddy with the good old USA, everybody laughed. The air smelled great, smelled of salt water and jacaranda trees. The air was cool, too cool for the girls, but running had heated them a bit. Clean little sidewalks wandered among small green hills with strange little barbecue stands and even more playgrounds. Vampi had to swing at every one. Atomiko climbed the monkey bar igloo and stood atop it, holding his staff over his head and bellowing. "Es King Kong," Yolo noted. They were delighted to find well-lighted public bathrooms. Clean, too. The girls took up three stalls and chattered as they did their business. Atomiko entered his bathroom with his staff extended before him, ready to smite muggers. But there was no one there. He availed himself of the urinal, then surprised himself by washing his hands. He could not believe he could wash his hands in steaming hot water. He had some trouble managing the blow dryer, and finally simply wiped his hands on his pants and stood guard outside the girls' door. Their laughter and gossip echoed inside. They could be heard all over the bay. He felt it was a terrible security problem, but you couldn't dampen high spirits at a moment like this. Their happiness would get them far on their journey before despair slowed them again. So he planted his staff and struck an ominous pose. The notorious girlfriends exited the bathroom and set off at a brisk pace. They looked at the stars. They watched the bright white cross atop the hill. They looked around them at the many house lights on the slopes of Claremont. A man walking three pugs on leashes came along and said, "Good evening."
"Adios," Vampi chirped. Nayeli nudged her.
At the visitor's center, they gathered and stared into the soda machines. More lights. Moths battered themselves on the neon tubes. Two policemen in shorts and bike helmets pedaled by on their mountain bikes. One waved. Vampi waved back.
"Adios," she called.
"Shh," Yolo scolded. "You want to be deported again?"
Atomiko laughed. "Those are city cops," he said. "La plaza esa. They don't care if you have papers or not." Vampi crossed her arms and said, "See?"
"I love America," Nayeli sighed. "The policemen ride bikes and wear shorts."
"This was a good idea," Yolo said. "I didn't think so, but now I do. It is so clean."
"It's too damned clean," Atomiko complained. "Where are the bonfires? How can you party with no bonfires?"
Vampi pointed across the water. Bonfires burned on a low island. They could see fat men in lawn chairs drinking from cans.
I stand corrected, Atomiko announced.
He raised his staff and called, Party!
Maybe we can find some dead dogs, too, so you'll feel at home, Yolo said.
You are very humorous, the warrior replied. A VW bug circled the round driveway. It was full of American girls. The bass was bumping and the girls laughed as the car circled. Nayeli could smell them from this far away. Shampoo and perfume and cigarettes.
M&M! Vampi shouted.
The girls waved and sped off into the night.
It is the sisterhood of music, she intoned.
Yolo and Nayeli shook their heads.
This chick is too much, Yolo complained.
Vampi was so happy she threw her arms around Atomiko.
Do you love it here? She asked.
It's peachy, he said.
Ooh, you're so tough.
I love you, though, he offered.
Me and every other hot girl.
You are hot, he agreed. Muy, muy caliente, mi chiquita.
All right, Buster, she said. She let him go.
Moras, she shouted. What do you want to do now that we're in Los Unaites?
Nayeli, find my father. Yolo, find Mateo. Nayeli,
that too.
Yolo, find Tacho. Tacho. They all started crying again.
Darling Tacho.
Atomiko hawked up some phlegm and spit.
I want to go to Disneyland, he said.
They goggled at him. Everyone expected he'd say something like, I want to go to a strip club and see hard bodies, or something like, I want to get into a gang fight and kill 100 men with my bare hands. He felt self-conscious, the way they were staring at him and sniffling, wiping their eyes and noses on their sleeves.
What? He demanded.
They giggled.
Disneyland, Atomiko? Nayeli said.
Hey, he said. I just want to whack Mickey Mouse with my pole.
The girls burst out laughing.
Your pole? Yolo cried. You could have whacked Tacho with your pole if you were lonesome, Vampi said.
Then they thought about Tacho and felt weepy all over again. Nayeli banged on the phone one time.
Tachito, she said.
Food, Atomiko proclaimed, saving face.
He pointed with his pole at a jack-in-the-box across the freeway. Did you bring money? Nayeli asked.
Nell?
I suppose I'm buying you a meal?
I am earning my keep, guarding you on your journey. I am...
We know who you are, Yolo blurted.
The girls all crowed.
You are Atomiko!
He shrugged, looked away inscrutably. Nayeli pulled out her missionary map card. She and Yolo stared at each other.
Should I? Nayeli said.
You have to.
I'm nervous.
Just do it. Nayeli picked up the phone, then laughed and hung it up.
You coward, Yolo said.
No, Nayeli replied. I don't have any American money left. We spent it all. I have pesos, and it won't take pesos.
Atomiko coughed, spit. Food, he repeated. They walked over the bridge.
Chapter 20 The girls had never eaten tacos made with hamburger meat.
American food, said Yolo.
Vampi slurped a Dr. Pepper.
Dr. Pimienta, she translated. But I don't taste any pepper.
Let me taste it, said Nayeli. She scrunched her nose. I think that's prune juice, she said.
Let me taste, demanded Yolo.
She took a pull. Cherries, she said. They had been lucky. All the employees in the burger stand were undocumented Mexicans, except for one Guatemalan. They exchanged pesos for dollars at a bad rate, but at least Nayeli could buy food and get change for the payphone. Atomico had acted out a violent attack of nausea and retching when they ordered tacos. He wasn't falling for that. He ordered 2 Jumbo Jacks with cheese and large fries and a chocolate milkshake. And a piece of apple pie.
Enjoy your diabetes, Yolo muttered. You're in America now, cabronas, he noted. Apple pies. That's what they eat.
If we keep you here very long, Nayeli noted, you will spark a famine all by yourself.
All the paisanos will come home on their own, Vampi said, just so you don't force them to die of hunger.
They slapped her high fives, always eager to reward her for saying something witty or pithy.
Let's get some onion rings, Atomico recommended.
Ma Johnston was one of those good, invisible, hard-luck women who lived along the tougher, low-rent sections of Claremont Drive. Her duplex was in a line of duplexes that were set face-to-face across small yellow strips of lawn. They turned their sides to the main street, and their large living-room windows had peered at each other for 40 years. The occasional palm tree shot into the sky like a frozen firework, and seemed to be caught as the trajectory of its ascension started to decay, curving a bit before it fell back to the ground. Pigeons and palm rats rattled the dry fronds. Ma's place was the rear unit, back off the street, beside the alley that ran between Claremont and Apache. She had 2 bedrooms and a small kitchenette and a bathroom with a small fiberglass tub. She liked to keep her plants on a table by the living room window. Matt used to sleep in the back room, separated from her by the bathroom. She was the first mom of any of the boys from the high school to have HBO, and though she knew they were coming over to see naked girls, she liked their company when they piled in on Friday nights. She didn't even mind if they smoked or snuck a beer, though if they smoked dope, they had to go out to the alley, and she'd pretend she didn't know. Matt's crazy surfer friends always brought her presents. Sand dollars or starfish, a bag of donuts or some beer. The ZZ twins were wild-haired longboarders of the old school. So old school they still wore hang ten shorts, though everybody else was wearing high-tech neon-colored threads. Zamaski and Zaragoza. When they became born again, they brought her Bibles and CDs of Christian singers. She still had her Rick Elias and the Confession CD in her little stereo beside the TV. The ZZs were her favorites. And even when Matt had gone missionary on her, run off to Mexico to save the Mexicans, the ZZ twins had hung around her house, keeping her company in his absence, keeping the bad guys at bay. They spoke that weird surfer talk she had never quite translated. Once, when she'd asked Zamaski how he was feeling, he said, "I'm creaching the boof." She had laughed for weeks about that one. 2 years later, she'd been hunting through the library's cast-off $1 sale table when she glanced at their computers and ventured to access the Internet. The librarian helped her search the phrase, "creechin' the boof." The best translation they could come up with was, "I am a fool for the light comedic opera."
She liked to think that's what Zamaski meant, though she knew it wasn't. It had been rough since Matt had returned from his missionary days, unsure of his faith. He had questions. Well, she was never happy with his Bible-thumping phase. He had come home from Mexico and lost his friendship with the ZZs when he'd fought with them about the rapture. Matt was of the opinion that there was not going to be a rapture, and nobody would be left behind to battle evil demonic hordes because nobody was going anywhere, no matter what the twins' favorite book said. The ZZs might have forgiven this theological breakup, but Matt had also become, heretically, disinterested in surfing. The boys could not believe it. To abandon the waves was truly abandoning the Lord. "Dude," Zaragoza had warned, "Satan's whispering in your ear." Oh, well. It was a crisis of conscience for poor Matthew. Ma Johnston knew how thoughtful he was. She knew he was given to liberal ideas. She was a Reagan Republican, all the way. But she knew that young people had to search. Hadn't she searched? It brought her from Virginia to San Diego and Matthew's father in 1957. Ah, she tossed her coffee. Ancient history. Ever since she'd retired, things had been tighter than usual. Being a low-level secretary for the school district had not provided them with lots of money. She had to admit that Matt's missionary phase almost broke her. But between her retirement and her late husband's Social Security, she had done all right. The rent was low, even though Matt had gone to San Francisco to work in some store, selling art pins, whatever they were. They sold a ceramic nipple pin that you apparently wore on your breast. Ha ha. He sent her $50, sometimes $100 checks, stuck inside funny greeting cards. The kind with kittens hanging on to the ends of ropes that said, "Hang in there." Matt. He was a good boy. She maintained his room for him, at least for the few times he came home to visit. All his Steve Miller albums were stacked up in there, in order, the way he liked them. His black Jimi Hendrix banner hung above the bed. Matt liked the old stuff. He said new music didn't speak to him. Instant coffee, rice-a-roni, dry cat food for the alley cats she fed, strawberry jam. She walked out of the little shopping center and thought about buying some donuts at the Winchells, then remembered they'd torn it down. Why did everything good have to be destroyed? It was a little over a half a mile to her house. The next day was trash day. She put away her things and was seen by skinny Carla, who hung out in the alley, hoping to score some ice off the bikers who lived next door to Ma. Carla was sweet. She always waved at Ma Johnston. That was a Thursday. By Saturday, Ma hadn't come out to collect her empty garbage cans. Carla had wandered across the alley to see if she was okay. And she found Ma Johnston dead on the kitchen floor, a broken jar of jam beside her. Matt was through crying. Really. His mother's sad last effects. Used books, little doilies and figurines. Albums of photographs of people he did not recognize. He had given her clothes to Goodwill and had thrown out her bras and underwear. Carla was majorly stoked to get the nipple pin. She laughed out loud when she saw it. The Mongols, who lived next door, came over with beer and sat with him for a while. They scared the hell out of him, but they were decent and spoke highly of his mom. Carla ventured over and spent the night with him. Their sleep
asexual and melancholy. Even naked, he felt nothing for her. She was all ribs and butterfly tattoos. It was mostly about body heat. She fancied his Hendrix banner, so he gave it to her. How was he hanging with bikers and naked dope fiends? In San Francisco, he was learning to eat sushi and dating a ballet dancer. He went to art museums. But who was he kidding? The ballet dancer was over before Ma passed away. Driving home had been almost easy. He kept the windows open to air it out. This stinking duplex was as depressing as anything he could imagine. He'd choked on its hot air all through junior high and high school. He was going to get out of here, wasn't that the plan? Some kind of success story? Anywhere but San Diego. San-di-go. Sandy-ego. He'd played that Hendrix song over and over to his red-haired high school girlfriend, Rocky Lee. "I'll come back and buy this town," Jimmy sang, "and put it all in my shoe." He hadn't seen her in 10 years. Matt thought he'd get Ma out of this place somehow, before it was too late. He used to tell Rocky Lee that hell was located in Claremont. You died and drove into Ma's neighborhood and just went in circles from cul-de-sac to cul-de-sac with those dead palm trees above your head, and you never found your way out. Another mission aborted. He sat on the couch, staring at the TV. Now what? He drank another beer, Tecate. He'd left his job in San Fran to get her cremated and her cremains scattered in the ocean. The man at the funeral home made human ashes sound like breakfast cereal. He had driven down in his 67 Mustang Fastback, now parked beside Ma's wasted minivan in the alley. He was too frozen to think. He was afraid. He was trapped in a bad story where the Venus flytrap of Ma's duplex somehow reached out and consumed him. Rod Serling stuff. He ate Ma's macaroni and drank her instant coffee and Tecate and slept on the couch. He just couldn't bear to lie in his bed unless Carla was there with him. But in the morning, it was worse to wake up beside her. When Ma's phone started to ring, the Tres Camarones cards he had handed out those years ago were the furthest thing from his thoughts. He pulled into the parking lot in Ma's minivan. This had to be the weirdest thing that had happened to him. Ever. He got out of the van and said, "Nayeli?" But didn't manage to get much more said because the three girls flew at him and threw their arms around him, crying out and squeezing and dragging him back and forth. He fell over against the van, but they didn't let go as they rubbed him and hugged him. He wasn't all that thrilled with the grunge merchant with the big stick, but he was delighted to see the girls again. He thought, "They are short." He didn't know what to do, so he took them home. He couldn't believe they still had his number. How unlikely was that? In his mind, they had remained gawky and silly teeny boppers, and now... He looked at Nayeli, perched beside him. He glanced back at Yolo and Vampi. They were not gawksters anymore. "Wow," he kept saying. "Wow." "Ay, Mateo," Nayeli sighed, shaking her head. "But, like, wow." "Mateo, Mateo. Eres tremendo, Mateo." To Atomico, the whole thing sounded demented and silly. He busied himself during the drive, looking at the nice houses, cars, and the shining 7-Eleven atop the hill. A man could steal a fortune around here. He was amazed that all the cars looked new. Maybe he'd boost one and drive back to the dump in style. Matt prepared to apologize for how sad his ma's place looked, but when they walked in, Atomico whistled. He plopped on the couch and said, "Hey, you've got a remote." He switched on the TV and said, "Got any beer?" Said Matt. Nayeli cried, "Matteo, you house is a palace." "Beer in the fridge," Matt said. Atomico pointed at Vampi. "Get me a beer, will you, Mora?" She dutifully went to the kitchen and fetched him a can. "What a pimp," Yolo said. She and Nayeli hugged Matt from either side. He put his arms across their shoulders. Their breasts pressed against his ribs. Whoa. Their heads smelled a little oily, though. That was semi-gnarly right there. "Would you like a shower?" he asked.
"Bubble bath," Vampi said.
He had to go across the alley and get a Mr. Bubble from Carla. She followed him back over to stare at the illegals. Vampi got in the bathroom and soaked for about an hour. When she was done, Matt pulled a chair out of the kitchen and sat quietly, watching them watch MTV. Nayeli and Yolo kept casting glances his way and smiling. Vampi seemed mesmerized by the television. Atomico had laid his pole on the floor in front of the couch. He said, "I want pancakes." Nayeli winked. Matt just watched. Chapter 21. Tacho sat at a nasty little plywood table in a dull green room. The tabletop was splintery and gouged with initials and half-words. It was charred in various places from cigarettes left burning. The walls of the room were cement blocks, and the floor was old linoleum. He noted the ugly industrial green of the